Street.
The Nigerian Stock Exchange recorded an all-time high of...
And Balogun Street.
The maximum I will spend on fuel, so on throw, was 4,000.
On Balogun and Broad, Wednesdays at 5.
This is the realest business show on radio, I like to say. On Balogun and Broad, we talk about how the issues in the news affect businesses of all sizes and the people who work for them. How will CBN's court order affect online trading platforms? This was the biggest story that broke last week in the business world, and that makes it today's business hard fact. The Federal High Court granted the CBN an ex parte order to freeze the accounts of Chaka, Rise, Bamboo and Trove for 6 months. Now, technically, the companies can plead with the court to reverse the six-month freeze order, but they'll have to wait for when the court will sit next time in 6 months. So today, let's talk about what all of this means, right? What it means for these startups, what it means for their clients, what it means for their investors, and what it means for the ecosystem. And this isn't the only action that CBN is taking or promising to take in the last few weeks. We'll also talk about their recent warning to microfinance banks. And then we'll take a look at the proposed NITDA Amendment Act to see what type of environment it wants to create for tech companies. I have two guests to share their insights today. My first guest is West Africa correspondent for Quartz, Alexander Onukwue. Welcome to Balogun and Broad on Hard Facts.
Thanks a lot, Sandra. Good to be here with you.
My second guest is co-founder of First Check Africa, a venture capital firm investing in the Nigerian tech space, Eloho Omame. Welcome to Balogun and Broad on Hard Facts.
Hi, Sandra. Thanks for having me again.
And Lagos, we want to hear from you as well. Let's have your questions for our guests on the CBN's moves against these online trading platforms and give your opinions as well, right? So you have the numbers 01465-7190 for women and 0700-993-993-993 for men. Eloho, let me start with you. Before we get into the case itself, right, I think Lagos needs a bit of an explainer about what these apps do and why they've become so popular recently.
Okay, so what do these apps do and why have they become so popular recently? Basically, these apps give Nigerians access to buying securities, mostly stocks, generally stocks, sometimes things like exchange-traded funds, but basically assets that are listed on stock exchanges in the US. So the idea is I'm in Nigeria, I'm earning my Naira, I put my penny together, I fund a wallet on one of these accounts, on one of these apps, rather, and they buy securities in the US for me, traded securities, visible securities, liquid securities. They buy securities for me on US exchanges. There are two groups. On the one hand, you have the Rise, which is effectively managed accounts. So I give Rise a certain amount of money. I fund my account with it. And Rise tells me, I will create a portfolio for you of equities, maybe some fixed income, which is your bonds. Maybe I'll do a few kind of real estate assets as well, you know, but here is your target return and I'll invest that for you in the US, which we all know is the most liquid, robust stock market in the world, right? The other group looks a bit more like the Bamboos, which is you can buy individual stocks. So you want to buy a share of Apple or you want to buy a fractional share in Apple because the share price is so high, you know, that gives me the access to be able to do that. So I end up owning individual stocks and I build a portfolio through the app.
What does this freeze freeze order mean in practical terms? Has it gone into effect? How does it affect the users of these services? I think these are the questions at the top of mind for a lot of people.
So the second half to your first question was, why has it become so popular? The question is, I mean, I don't know what so popular means, but these are apps that are growing, right? Why are they popular? Because, of course, they give people access to yields that they may not otherwise have in the Nigerian environment. We know that we're high inflation.
Right.
And so ability to protect our wealth and invest in markets where, for example, my returns are US dollar benchmark,
right.
You know, is a bit, you know, it's an opportunity to create wealth. So that's why they're attractive.
Right.
you know, in terms of what the effect has been, I mean, of course, I don't work for these apps, right? So right. I couldn't tell you, you know, at the end of the day, here's kind of what the internal effect has been. What I do know is that I use a couple of them.
Right.
I'm still able to fund my account.
Right.
I'm still able to add $100 here or there. And buy equities.
Right.
What this, and in terms of, you know, has it gone into effect immediately, as far as I'm aware. So
right.
there wasn't anything unequivocal about the CBN announcements around the freezing of the accounts. It was, I believe it said, with immediate effect.
Right.
So those accounts are frozen and the order is for the next 180 days. But right. we must kind of remember, you know, ultimately that these are businesses that are plugged in into, you know, the fintech infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that an account may be blocked or frozen doesn't necessarily mean that as a user, I'm not able to fund my account.
Mm.
I'm able potentially to do that depending on what the wallet infrastructure that sits behind my account looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible to actually route those funds without them ever touching an account of a Rise or a Bamboo.
Mm.
And so my suspicion is the fact that they continue to operate and the funds are not trapped, as far as I'm aware, as a user, like I said, I'm still able to carry on.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect it's because what's happening is, of course, there's a network of accounts that sit behind it, and it's not always the operating accounts that hold the cash that I've just funded as a user.
Hmm, I see. Alex, what argument did the CBN make against these companies in court to secure this freeze order?
Well,
Alex?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, so the main argument is that they are contravening the 2015 directive. And this directive sort of has a banned list of items that if you are taking Forex from the Nigeria market, you're not allowed to use that Forex to bring those things, to purchase those things. And one of the items on that banned list is Eurobonds, foreign shares. And essentially, that's the business that these startups are involved in. When you, as a user, you don't necessarily fund your accounts with dollars. You fund it with Naira. And they now help you do the exchange conversion to help you invest, even though at the end of the day, they pay your returns in Naira. And for the CBN or for the lawyer who made this suit, on behalf of the CBN, it's a contravention of that order. That's the formal complaint. Of course, the other things that are underlined is that there's a complaint that they are putting pressure on the Naira by the volume of dollar transactions that they make.
You know, one of the CBN's accusations is that these companies are operating without the needed licenses, Alex. But one of them, Chaka, just got a license from the Securities and Exchange Commission for online trading. So, and we saw a similar situation with, I remember it was cryptocurrency exchanges. Just when the SEC was talking about a framework for licensing and regulating them, the CBN ordered the banks to cut them off. So, Alex, is it accurate to say that the regulators are not working hand in hand here? And if so, Alex, what are the factors causing this?
Well, we know that when it comes to the monetary policy, the CBN is the sovereign. The SEC, as a matter of fact, was initially used to be part of the CBN,
right.
But now it's an independent organization.
Mm.
And indeed, yeah, the SEC gave Chaka the asset management license, the digital sub-broker license, earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever involves asset management should typically be the SEC's business. But the CBN, again, invoking the directive from 2015, is saying that. And that's why, basically, they're not necessarily complaining about asset management here. That's really not the main complaint. The main complaint is that 2015 directive. But also, they want these guys to get the license. And like it happened with the crypto thing, the CBN's complaint, again, is that they want to protect the banking system. So it's like they are saying something formally, but informally they are also alleging other things, which encroaches into the SEC's mandate. We don't know why they are not working together.
Hmm.
From a distance, it's hard to tell.
To say. Hmm.
Yeah, the only thing we can we can assume is that the CBN is exerting its power as the ultimate decider of what happens in the country's monetary environment. And yeah, maybe they have the power to do that.
Eloha, what do you think?
So look, I think that there are a bunch of issues that come into play here when we talk about what's going on, right? Philosophically, I think that a Nigerian, the fact that I'm a Nigerian should not preclude me from being able to build wealth in assets, find liquidity, as long as I'm not breaking any laws, I should be able to find yield and find assets wherever they may be. Right. And if that means that I'm investing in buying US securities, that's got to be okay.
Right.
I don't think that the job of the CBN, I don't think that it is acceptable for an implication of the CBN exerting its power being that effectively as a Nigerian,
right,
I am locked out of opportunities to preserve my wealth. Let's not forget we're in a high inflation economy, as well as opportunities to build my wealth. Right? I've earned that money. I should be able to spend it. I think that when we talk about the 2015 regulation, look, I've looked at it. And there are two schools of thought on the 2015 regulation, right? Happy to, you know, be corrected. On the one hand, you have a group of people that say that what the regulation actually says is that the excluded items, I think there's a list of 41 items or
that's
something.
That's right, yeah.
The excluded items, what the Act says is that you cannot purchase foreign exchange for those items through the official CBN window.
Right.
But that's the kind of the expansive way to interpret it, right? The CBN pronouncement, because it means that As a Nigerian, I'm not restricted from my ability to acquire foreign exchange. It just says that the government will not subsidize my foreign exchange purchases for certain things. And in that case, that's kind of where the, you know, if you interpret it that way, that's where my funding my Bamboo account or funding my RiseVest account happens, right? At the end of the day, these guys are charging me 500 and whatever it is, a dollar to fund my account. So from that perspective, fine. What I'm saying is, okay, I don't get the official CBN rate, but I will go through, but I will continue to trade.
Right.
The other way to interpret it is that the CBN, what it actually says, and I don't actually know ultimately, the interpretation seems to be a little bit vague depending on what the purpose is that we're trying to achieve from one day to the next.
Right.
But the other way to interpret it is that actually anything that does not come through the official CBN window should not be done, right? As, you know, we shouldn't acquire dollars for any other purpose outside of those things that are inside the CBN window. Now, that as a Nigerian is problematic to me because, for example, it's prejudicial as well. For example, it says that school fees, medical tourism, all of that stuff is okay. Well, I don't have kids and I don't have any medical issues. But what I want to do is I want to invest in the US, right? And so there's a problem for me the second we start to interpret what that is in that way, right? Even if indeed that is what the CBN intends, then I actually have an existential problem with it. Aside from that, I think there's also the broader issue, and I think you're spot on to tug on this thread of what is the conflict between SEC and CBN, right? Because you're right. The first time it was like, okay, so here is the path to the crypto guys and girls being licensed for what they're doing. And then the next minute, the CBN is shutting down their accounts. One minute, here is the path to licensing for what we call the robo-advisors, which is what a RiseVest does, or the digital brokers, which is what a Shaka or a Bamboo does. And suddenly, SEC is giving us a path to licensing for these guys and girls. And then CBN is saying, no, I'm shutting down your accounts. I think there needs to be better harmonization around these kinds of things. We talk all the time about, you know, the implications then on investor confidence and the way people look at
Nigeria. Because that's where I was going to go next, because you're an investor.
Everyone goes there. everyone goes there. And of course, as an investor myself, I'm not comfortable. What I will say, though, is as a user, right? It's terrifying. As an entrepreneur, it's terrifying. I'm creating value. I'm building a business. I'm giving Nigerians an opportunity to build wealth. And I wake up one day and I read in a circular that the CBN has just shut down my operating accounts. Yes, there are a bunch of maneuvers and plays I can make in the background. That means that, for example, using my payment processors, I don't need to route money through those accounts. But it's not really ideal because I'm also then spending the next several weeks dealing with inquiries from my customers. Is my money safe? Is my money safe? By the way, yes, your money is safe, right? Because these guys and girls have had to build in, right, a bunch of measures that mean that they are able to continue to operate in the event that the regulator does something that feels a little bit erratic, something they didn't see coming, right? And you mentioned the crypto guys and girls. The good news for the investment apps is that they saw what happened with the crypto guys and girls.
Okay.
So they were able to say, you know what happens the day CBN decides that we can no longer connect to the banking network,
right,
or to the banking system in that way?
Right.
What is plan A? What is plan B?
Right.
What are the various scenarios around that? I think that's why we don't seem to have seen as much disruption this time.
Okay.
But let's not forget, for the crypto guys and girls, they then had to completely pivot their models and figure out how we were going to, as users, start to use what they call a P2P system,
right,
to on-ramp into being able to trade crypto.
Right.
So that's not happening here, but it's massively disruptive, right? So when we say, oh, it's, you know, the regulation says this, okay, but one, I have an existential problem with that as a Nigerian, and does the regulation actually say that?
Mm.
But aside from that, there does need to be this harmonization, because it's confusing everybody. It's confusing users, it's confusing investors, it's confusing entrepreneurs. And it's just not really helpful ultimately.
I'm glad you brought up cryptocurrency. Let me stay with you a bit longer, Eloho, because that's another of the CBN's arguments. They say that some of these companies were trading in cryptocurrency in spite of the CBN order. Now, I need some clarity on this. Does the CBN circular apply to these online traders? Because it was targeted at banks and, quote, other financial institutions. Does this include Rise and Shaka and Bamboo and Trove?
So in principle, the CBN does not regulate Rise and Bamboo and Shaka, right? The SEC regulates them. The SEC, the SEC is attempting to draw them under the net of its regulation, right? And I don't think there's any resistance from the entrepreneurs to that, right?
Okay.
And I think you're right. What the CBN said was, okay, banks, anybody who is, you know, using their accounts to trade crypto, we don't, you know, stop them from having access to their accounts. And right. I suppose if you interpret it that way in principle, then if that is indeed what was happening, and I read it in the news as much as you did, then I suppose then one becomes caught in that net. What a lot of people miss about cryptocurrencies when we talk about it is that cryptocurrencies are not always these massively volatile instruments like Bitcoin, and everyone talks about protecting the end user and all of this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about systemic threats to the investment landscape. Mm. Sometimes cryptocurrencies mean stable coins. These are coins that allow us to do a transfer from Naira into something called USDC, for example, USD coin, back into some other currency, because we need to sort of do that on-ramp into the crypto ecosystem. Now, I don't know what the volumes of crypto that the CBN observed were. I don't know what kinds of crypto were being purchased. My suspicion is it wasn't like they were running away trading crypto. If anything, it was probably, we're talking about stable coin volumes in order to be able to give their customers that access into the markets that they've promised.
I
think at some point, you know, regulation, we must be careful not to regulate to the point that it is everyday Nigerians that suffer, right, ultimately. We talk about people going in and out of CBN windows and all of that. This is interesting now because we're talking about retail customers who tend to be Gen Z users, etc., on digital apps. But there are people who have massive volumes of money, who are making investments offshore, who are having to access capital outside of the official CBN windows. You know, and there doesn't seem to be any concern about the extent to which that is destabilizing the market. We're talking about a couple of million dollars here for a couple of digital apps, right? And that, for me, feels massively unfair. And I don't think that should be the job of a regulator.
Lagos, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Balogun and Broad. It's our business show on Hard Facts, the realest business show on radio. And today we are firmly on Broad Street. We're talking about the CBN's order to, the Federal High Court granted them an ex parte order to freeze the accounts of Chaka, Rise, Bamboo and Trove for 6 months. So we're talking about that. We're also talking about some warnings coming from the CBN to microfinance banks. And we're also going to look at the proposed NITDA Amendment Act to see what type of environment it wants to create for tech companies. I've got on the show with me Alexander Onukwue, who is the West Africa correspondent for Quartz. And then I also have the co-founder of First Check Africa, a venture capital firm investing in the Nigerian tech space. Her name is Eloho Omame. Alexander, let me come to you for a bit with the same question I asked Eloho regarding cryptocurrency, right?
Right.
That order from the CBN, It was targeted to banks, but does it include rice and chaka and bamboo and Trove?
So the first thing that we should say is that CBN orders are almost always ambiguous. And when you think it's saying one thing, it turns out that it might be saying something else. So what we understood from the February...
Before you even go forward, should it be like that? Should CBN orders be ambiguous?
It shouldn't be in a perfect world, yeah. But we're in Nigeria.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
And how we understood, how everybody understood the order was that... the CBN was telling banks to no longer facilitate cryptocurrency transactions. The order was to banks. It did not criminalize cryptocurrency transactions by individuals or by any business. Yes, banks were told to stop, to close accounts that would transact in crypto going forward.
Hmm.
So coming to this one now, by the way, what we are seeing here is an allegation. So they say that inquiries on RiseVest transactions confirm that their transfers were to buy coins for cryptocurrency.
Right.
That's what they're alleging, and we don't know that for sure.
Right.
It would probably be useful for whoever, you know, filed these suits on behalf of the CBN to show more proof that this happened. However, I don't know that order criminalizes whatever it is that RiseVest did with Bitcoin,
right,
if it did not pass through any banking system. But yeah, it's part of the ambiguity of the whole regulation and the whole language that CBN uses at the moment.
Hmm. All right, Lagos, we want to take your thoughts. We want to hear your thoughts on what my guests have said so far, right? The numbers are 01465-7190, 01465-7190 for our female callers. For our male callers, 0700-993-993-993. You can also reach us via WhatsApp. WhatsApp is 080-959-75805. There's Facebook where we're streaming live, Nigeria Info 99.3. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take your calls, we'll take your thoughts, and we'll keep talking to our guests on today's Balogun and Broad on Hard Facts.
You earn a living. You probably own a business, work for one, or want to start one. Business is central to your life. But do most business shows really speak to you?
Today on the show, the $1 billion valuation of
Balogun and Broad does. Let's talk about the stock market and Alaba market. Let's talk about share IPOs and diesel supply LPOs. Let's talk about Broad Street.
The Nigerian Stock Exchange recorded an all-time high of...
And Balogun Street.
The maximum I will spend on fuels on Trove was 4,000.
On Balogun and Broad, Wednesdays at 5.
Lagos, it's 5:36. I'm Sandra S. Zekwesili. How will CBN's court order affect online trading? If you joined us at the top of the hour, you know that I told you that we're talking about this ex parte order from a high court granted to the CBN to freeze the accounts of Chaka, Rise, Bamboo and Trove for 6 months. So we're going to talk about what that means. Well, we have talked about what that means, to be honest. We're also going to talk about the proposed NITDA Amendment Act to see what types of environment it wants to create for tech companies. I've had two guests sharing their insights on the show. My first guest is West Africa correspondent for Quads, Alexander Onukwe. And then my second guest is the co-founder of First Check Africa, a venture capital firm investing in the Nigerian tech space. Now, let's switch gears a bit, right? Let's come to microfinance banks. Alex, the CBN published a circular directed at them a few days ago, basically reminding them that they cannot trade in Forex, that they cannot do credit transactions above 1 million naira for their highest tier of customer, and that at least 80% of their loan portfolio must actually be microcredit. Now, there's been a suggestion that this circular is aimed at microfinance banks who give cover to fintechs that don't have licenses. Do you think that this is the case, Alex? I'll ask Eloha the same question as well, but I'll start with Alex. Do you think that this is the case? And if you think that's the case, what exactly is the CBN trying to discourage?
Yeah, so the CBN is trying to make sure that microfinance banks are doing microfinance, making sure that they are not using the microfinance bank license as a cover to do bigger transactions that, again, might hamper the financial system. So what's happening at the moment is that digital banks buy microfinance banks and use their licenses to sort of offer banking services, whether it's lending or credit or whatnot. And for a microfinance bank license, it comes with limits on transactions. You can't do forex, like you mentioned. You should be lending to small businesses. You shouldn't be lending to big corporations. And the CBN has not really been enforcing this project because they felt like microfinance banks, because a microfinance license restricts you to a particular location, they were not a threat. But now, with the digital layer making it possible for a microfinance bank to offer services to anybody, it became necessary for the CBN to sort of come in and say, look, the license restricts you to particular things. And we already have one casualty from this, Rubies last year, Rubies Microfinance Bank. The CBN felt they were doing Forex and enabling other people do transactions that were not enabled by the license. So it's a reminder, it's not a new law. And as you may have noticed, the reaction was not as emotional or as sensational as any of the other directives that came out last week.
Eloha, do you agree? And if not, what do you think?
I don't disagree that what's probably happening. Hi, Alex. I don't disagree that what's probably happening is that, you know, you have, let me phrase it slightly differently. You have the microfinance licenses as an on-ramp for the what we call the neo banks or the challenger banks into the formal banking system. Hmm. And I think it is important that as the regulator, the CBN creates an environment and preserves an environment in which things like depositors' funds are safe, in which things like, you know, the different mechanisms and the different categories of licenses that it has are doing the work that it expects to do. So, for example, you're making microfinance loans and you're operating in all of those things. And I can't speak specifically to who that directive was issued as a reminder to. What I can say, I've
reminder.
Seen the regulations. Yeah, because, you know, okay. Who knows? What I can say is, look, I think there's a problem, right? If there's a gap in the market for financial services, and you have people coming in to try and deliver those financial services, and the regulation itself is a barrier to things like financial inclusion. You have a bunch of people who prefer to bank with these neo challenger banks, for example, than they do to bank with legacy banks. It's okay for me to want to desire better service. And it's okay for somebody to show up and say, you know what, I can deliver a better banking experience. I can give you a digital first banking experience. I can help you do all the things as a young person that you want to do from your bank today. And I can do it cheaper, faster, and better than all the alternatives. Now, I think the work of regulation should be okay. Let's create a regulatory environment in which that is possible, right? Not create a regulatory environment in which there are so many different silos and there's so much complexity around who does what to whom, where and when, right? That kind of innovation is not possible. So philosophically, again, you know, I just say to myself, look, what exactly are we trying to achieve with this regulation? But I completely understand. You know, in fact, I appreciate the CBN saying, okay, here's my warning shot to everybody out there. It's a better approach, right, than some of the other approaches we've seen, which is things like literally shutting down people's businesses overnight, right? But it is important that we have an environment in which people are able to sort of build a challenger bank. I love the idea of somebody building a challenger bank, right? Whether or not I'm going to leave my legacy bank, that's kind of not the point.
But there's an argument. But there's an argument that because startups in new spaces move fast, they're bound to overtake regulation sometimes. And when that happens, the regulator should try to improve compliance and growth without dropping the hammer and killing the business. But a lot of others say that this is just a fancy way to excuse bad behavior from startups. Which way do you lean?
Which way do I lean? I love the idea of regulatory sandboxes. I love the idea of the regulator saying, okay, so there is this gap in the regulation that means that if a startup moves super quickly around trying to deliver this kind of value and deliver this kind of product, we haven't seen that before. We understand that your space is moving super quickly. So here's a regulatory sandbox. Build it, test it within that. Stay close to us. Let's see what you're doing. And we'll decide if we need a new regulatory category for what you're doing. I stand on the side of people should have choice. Consumers, entrepreneurs should create value for consumers, and regulation should not stand in the way of that to the extent that we're not talking about people making, you know, people are not losing their incomes, losing their deposits, none of which is under contemplation here, right? I stand on that side. I stand on the side of innovation. I stand on the side of entrepreneurship. I'm nervous about an environment in which, so I mentioned the on-ramp dynamic. I'm nervous about an environment in which you have, and I want to use a gentle word, but you have a degree or a sense of regulatory capture to the extent that let me not even bother trying to get a full license, even if I could afford it, right? Of course, startups tend to be much lower capitalized than some of the banks we're talking about. But even if I could afford it, like, these guys will spin me around in all kinds of red tape for a couple of years. So let me start with a smaller license. And then, as you say, what happens is my business then overtakes each time. I think that in and of itself is a problem. And it's one that the regulator actually probably needs to address.
Lagos, if you just tuned in, Balogun and Broad is sponsored today by UNICAF. UNICAF is the leading higher education provider, online higher education provider. And we're going to talk today about some of the opportunities, some of them very unique, that they provide through their scholarship program. I know, for instance, that they offer an MBA. These MBAs are necessary if you are doing business in very volatile environments. So if you're trying to figure out, well, how do I navigate business in a place like Nigeria? Getting an MBA from one of the schools where UNICAF facilitates access into could be the game changer for you. But back to my guests on the show. I wonder what Alex thinks about the people who say, oh, please, it's just a fancy way to excuse bad behavior from startups.
I like innovation. I like the fact that people are doing various experiments. And I think for you to get really sustainable innovation, you need lots of experiments going on at the same time. In fintech, in payments, banking in particular, because it's such a fundamental aspect of the economy, you don't want to stifle innovation. You want people to be doing different things. So whether it's microfinance, whether it's digital banking, I think all of these things are welcome. One place where I sort of see the point of the CBN sending out this reminder is that for microfinance banks, there are certain things you can't do with a microfinance license. So you don't have, if you're a microfinance bank, you need a sponsor bank at the clearinghouse, somebody who will receive your money for you. If you wanted to get on a card scheme, you can't go there directly. You need a sponsor bank as well. And so if you are a digital bank, experimental, fast, agile, and you're starting with a microfinance bank license, in as much as you want to challenge the big banks, the fact that you have a microfinance bank license puts some restrictions on the things you can do. And it's, I suppose it's important for the financial system that everybody sort of respects those restrictions. So if you're a microfinance bank, you don't need 25 billion naira capitalization. You need just about 200 million, depending on if it's a state license or a national license. With that low capitalization, it limits some of the things you can do. And what the CBN is saying is, if you have that low barrier to entry, if you have this lower license, stick with it for now. Don't try to do wholesale banking, as they said. Don't try to go punching above your weight. Even though, to be honest, the banks, the digital banks, are simply exploiting a loophole. So the microfinance bank license restricts you to a physical location. Mm-hmm. But a digital bank, for example, if your state microfinance bank license restricts you to Yaba in Lagos, mm-hmm. you have an app, which is your branch. Mm-hmm. If somebody in Kano decides to sign up on your app, it's not your fault mm-hmm. that they found you. Mm-hmm. So that's a loophole that the microfinance bank license holders are sort of exploiting, which is nobody's fault. Mm. Yeah. So I guess what we will be expecting is perhaps the CBN introducing a new sort of special digital banking license. Mm. We don't know that how it will go, but that might be the next destination.
Lagos, you're listening.
Alex,
yes, go ahead.
Just to Alex's scenario, imagine I download an app in Yaba, mm-hmm. and then the next week I move to Kano. What happens? That bank can no longer bank. Like the world, you know what I mean? It's like, forget that I'm even in Kano downloading the app. What if I'm in Yaba the day I download the app, mm. and then I decide that, okay, I'm now moving my business and my life to Kano. Mm. So there is a case for sure, and I agree with him, that look, we can't kind of have to look at the way that these businesses are being built today mm. and say the job of the regulation is actually to sort of follow them a bit and to serve them, mm-hmm. as opposed to constantly kind of cut them off at the knees.
Hmm. Lagos, you're listening to Balogun and Broad. I love this conversation. I'm sure you do too. It's brought to you courtesy UNICAF. UNICAF is the leading online higher education provider. Let's listen to them for a bit, and then we'll come back and talk about NITSTA as quickly as we can.
I want to study for an internationally recognized MBA degree that would help me boost my career, but I can't leave my family and my job.
At UNICAF, we are here to inspire and help you make an impact as you thrive for success. Grab this opportunity and study for an internationally recognized online MBA degree with up to 80% UNICAF scholarship. Pay in small monthly installments and have the flexibility to study at your pace. Limited spaces are now available with the University of East London and the University of Suffolk. Call us on 07000-111-000. That is 07000-111-000 to help you jumpstart today. With UNICAF, you can.
Aloha, let's talk about NITSTA as quickly as we can, because they are the regulator for the tech sector. I'm sure you both saw that draft NITSTA Act Amendment Bill that started circulating last week. Lots of backlash from the tech community about that, because if passed, this bill would, amongst other things, require all IT companies to get a license from NITSTA and pay into a development fund from their pre-tax profits. What's your take on these provisions, Eloho?
I read the draft of the act and I thought the proposed amendment, and I thought it was very aggressive. I didn't think that it was indicative of an environment that is welcoming to entrepreneurship. I think when you say to entrepreneurs that I can show up on your premises at any time, I can jail you.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I can show up at your premises at any time. I can jail you for this offense or that offense. There's a minimum, levy of X. And if you don't meet that levy, that it feels very aggressive. It doesn't feel like it's fostering innovation, encouraging entrepreneurship. It feels like it's a little bit predatory. And then, of course, the next level I think that freaked a lot of people out was, this 1% levy as well, which is going to be applied on PBT, mm-hmm. PBT, or mm-hmm. in principle is proposed. So effectively, you want to sort of put a tax before a tax, right? Mm-hmm. I'm an entrepreneur. There's a bunch of existing statutes and existing regulations that I have to comply with. And here you are saying you're going to add 1% on top of what I already do. Mm. Interestingly, I thought that, look, if you think about a lot of the fate of a lot of tech startups and increasingly kind of where things are moving with all of this that's going on, you'll probably find that what happens is the super high growth companies, actually from a PBT perspective, are not massively affected by this, either because you know, they're investing for growth, so they're reinvesting a lot, and you don't necessarily have a lot of PBT that Nika can frankly cream off. Mm-hmm. Or what's happening is they have operating entities. They potentially say, look, I'm going to stick an operating entity that's a bit of a pass-through vehicle in Nigeria, and the bulk of my operations I'm going to really record that offshore. Mm. You know, so from an accounting perspective, it's quote unquote easy to respond to that kind of thing. What will be affected is the entrepreneurs who are earlier in their journeys and or are not building such high growth businesses. You know, so it just feels very, very ill-advised to me. It certainly had the flavor to me of being hostile. Incidentally, you know, you talked about investors before, and I said, look, we always talk about things from an investor perspective. Let's talk about it from the user perspective. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, I was having a meeting yesterday with an investor, you know, who has just done one of these big tech rounds. And their view was, that's actually quite scary, the idea of a tax before a tax. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's pretty interesting. And that's what essentially what we're talking about here. So these things do have knock-on effects. They do make people pause. They do make people wonder, look, either how can we effectively pull the headquarters of these businesses out of Nigeria, have them sit elsewhere? Or do I really want to, you know, life is too short. Do I really want to deploy into this environment where tomorrow somebody can show up and say, okay, you know what, your tax before the tax before the tax. Let me stick my own tax before that one. You know what I mean? So I think we do need to be a little bit thoughtful with some of these things.
Mm. Alex, this bill also spells out some interesting penalties. Elohot mentioned a few of them while she was speaking. So there's jail time, there's 30 million naira fines for operating without a license. Alex, 30 million naira fine for deploying a technology not approved by NITDA. In terms of best practice, how do these things measure up? Global best practice, how do these things measure up, Alex?
So what I sort of learned from this experience is that NIDDA and perhaps the whole Nigeria technology ecosystem on the regulatory side, we seem to want to follow the European / India getting close to China end of the spectrum, whereas most of our startups have the Silicon Valley ideal of what an innovation ecosystem is. Mm. So Section 6 of this NIDDA bill says that NIDDA will test and approve that technology before it is used in Nigeria.
Right.
The tone is obviously very restrictive. It's a gatekeeping rule, which most people have observed is sort of against what NIDDA should be as an innovation enabler. And that's essentially the tone throughout the bill. It starts off saying that it wants to be an advisor. NIDDA says it wants to be an advisor to businesses, to startups. But the underlying tone of the document is that it wants to be a gatekeeper. Somebody said it's essentially a power grab. And yeah, somewhat hard to disagree with that.
Hmm. Eloho Mame is the co-founder of First Check Africa, a venture capital firm investing in the Nigerian tech space. And Alexander Onukwe is West Africa correspondent for Quads. And they've both been very wonderful sharing their time with us on Hard Facts. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you, Sandra.
All right, Lagos, this show is brought to you courtesy UNICAF. You'll hear from them one more time. Thank you so much, UNICAF, for making this possible today.
I want to study for an internationally recognized MBA degree that would help me boost my career, but I can't leave my family and my job.
At UNICAF, we are here to inspire and help you make an impact as you thrive for success. Grab this opportunity and study for an internationally recognized online MBA degree with up to 80% UNICAF scholarship. Pay in small monthly installments and have the flexibility to study at your pace. Limited spaces are now available with the University of East London and the University of Suffolk. Call us on 07000-111-000. That is 07000-111-000 to help you jumpstart today. With UNICAF, you can.
What I like is how it mentions the universities where people can study at. So there's University of East London, University of Suffolk, Liverpool John Moores University, and you have the multi-campus UNICAF University in Africa. With the competitive nature of business in Nigeria, which degree will you recommend for business enthusiasts, entrepreneurs, generally people who seek global business acumen?
Okay, so with UNICAF, you can get a British MBA degree. With that degree, you have an edge over everyone else competing for opportunities. The MBA teaches you the core skills you need both for management, for entrepreneurship, and for entrepreneurship. I mentioned, like you mentioned, the schools we have partnered with are University of East London, University of Suffolk, Liverpool John Moores University, and our multi-campus UNICAF University in Africa. And an MBA from these schools is undisputed, obviously, and the instructors are among the best. You really can't go wrong with an MBA because it opens new horizons for your career. And if you're getting an MBA from the University of East London or the University of Suffolk through UNICAF, you get an 80% UNICAF scholarship if you qualify. I'll repeat that again. You get an 80% UNICAF scholarship if you qualify. But there are limited slots available. And we also have easy payment plans for those who want to pay instrumentally. And these payments are very flexible. And our courses are also very flexible. The UNICAF program is designed for working professionals. UNICAF knows that they need the time to do their jobs while still keeping up with the courses. So there are no set times for classes. You can set your own schedule during the weekend or in the evenings. It's up to you. You're studying online, so I mean, you don't have to go to class. You don't have to go anywhere to mark register because everything is done from the comfort of your home.
All right, quickly give us the numbers that people can call and the WhatsApp number.
Okay, to find out more about the MBA scholarship, you can call 07000-111-000. That is 07000-111-000. Or send a WhatsApp message to 0816-866-4442. That is 0816-866-4442. You talk to UNICAF student advisor to help him make an educated decision.
Thank you so much. All right, Lagos, I'll give you a chance to win 10,000 naira if there is time immediately after the news. So between the news and what's it called now? Between the news and our conversation with CM Trading, stick around. If there's time, you win 10K.
It's 6. 99.3 Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Nigeria Info FM. Check us out on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3. Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos for live updates as it happens. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.